So it was a subdued Marv Albert in his living room, very subdued. The one that you might remember from the days on the NBC Game of the Week with the losing locker room. We're here with Whitey Herzog. Whitey, obviously not what you expected from the Cardinals today. It's a different version of Marv. It's the sad, and he was the best ever in the losing locker room. I look miserable, I am miserable, and I'm with the miserable manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, Whitey Herzog. What a horrific display by your squad.
Let's just do this for 20 minutes.
I'm telling you what, this is the opening of the show. I've never done this before. We were doing the sound check, and the sound check turned into the opening of the show. Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the In the Money Players podcast. We are here to do it's an experiment, frankly, but I think it's one that is going to work, and I'm really pumped about. We're here to talk about Monmouth on Sunday. We've got stakes races. We've got a lot of interesting stuff happening. And we thought it was worth, and the way the timing worked out with when things drew, to give this show its own little life. And you, the listeners, will decide if this is something that we'll return to or if you prefer having the Monmouth segments be in the main show. But this is how it's working out this week. Special show. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital. I'm at the little house on the east side, sitting at the kitchen table, already in stitches from the first voice that you heard that was not actually, believe it or not, not actually subdued Marv Albert, but sort of uncut Frank Miramati. Frank, how are you today?
I feel great. I'm sitting here in Seabright. I could not complain. We're actually getting some beautiful weather the last couple of weeks. The kind of weather I always told my mom I love Monmouth Park for, because you're by the beach and it's that fresh air. Unfortunately, a lot of these days are very humid, and today is not one of them. The last couple of weeks have been extraordinary. I'm usually not a big weather guy, but once you endure some of that heat in the middle of the day, you realize how nice this is.
Well, and also, am I correct, Frank, that your booth is open there? So you actually have to deal with the weather when there is weather. You're not hiding in air conditioning.
Actually, I like the fact that that is a very big plus for that booth at Monmouth Park, is the fact that both windows open. It would be quite uncomfortable if it wasn't that way. I love the fresh air. And we have an incredible air conditioning actually up on that very old press box that works incredibly well in there. And I know that it is deeply appreciated by those who visit the booth. In fact, on hot days, people like to come and just hang out just for the air conditioning. So the combination of air conditioning and the outdoor air, that makes Monmouth Park that much more fun. It's part of what makes the job so great, really is.
That's awesome. Well, I'm overdue for a visit. We're going to try to make that happen in September. Another person I'm very eager to get to have some proper FaceTime with. We've had plenty of Skype time, but we need to actually see each other in the flesh. That is our friend Brian Skirka. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Pete, and as someone who has lived here on the Jersey Shore his entire life, this is the best time of year when the weather dips a little bit and some of those, let's call them unwelcomes that happen to make their way down to the Jersey Shore here in the summer kind of dissipate back to their houses and leave our shore to us. This is the best time of the year. Great weather and still a lot of great racing and not as much traffic and horn honking.
That does sound fantastic. So keep that in mind, folks. And also, of course, Monmouth, what better place to go with the college football and the NFL starting? We didn't prep to talk about this at all, but Brian, I assume that's going to be a whole new ball game and something that you guys are looking forward to and hopefully trying to get some of these NFL fans betting on horses as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason that we're running a lot longer this year. If this was a normal season, if this was last year or years prior, next weekend would be our closing weekend. But we're going all the way through the end of October this year to try to capitalize on just what you said, those people who are coming here to bet college football or pro football, you know, to give them a live racing product. You know, we think it's a lot easier to ask someone to bet on a live product than to look up at a TV screen and you know, for their first horse racing bet, to have them bet, you know, some simulcast signal. But if we have actual horses in the paddock they can go look at and actual races going on while they're here. So we're going to run Saturdays, Sundays, all the way through September. And then in October, we're going to run Sundays here at Monmouth Park again to add to our football Sundays. And while we're doing that, we're going to run Fridays and Saturdays up at the Meadowlands, which we normally would do. But, you know, we haven't run live here at Monmouth through October in a very, very long time. And the plan is, now that we have sports betting, we might as well capitalize on that and have people who are coming here for racing bet on sports, people who are coming here for sports, show them the live product as well. So it'll be fun.
I'm excited to check it out. We do probably need to do some sort of podcast get-together associated with one of those days. It's just anytime we get to have these new racing experiences, it's something fans want to enjoy. It's a good opportunity to get together. Now, one of my favorite things about the show is that it cuts down the time I have to spend on the phone, because instead of calling up friends and asking them questions or sending a text, I can just ask you guys questions I want to know. And that leads directly to my next one for Frank, which is, what is your schedule? How long are you in for this extended Monmouth meet, and where do you go next?
I will be calling through Sunday, September 22nd, and then leaving here on the 24th, fly back to Los Angeles, where I will pick up my duties at Santa Anita Park the last Friday in September. And very excited about that, and obviously extremely thankful to Monmouth Park Management to let me miss this much time. But the good news is you bring in a top-notch guy, and there's a seamless transition. Jason Beam will be calling the races, and he did such a great job that his work speaks for itself. He's just finishing up a Colonial. This is a dream situation for him and myself to be very comfortable knowing that he's handling everything perfectly, which means accurate race calls, no extra fluff, and limited conversation on the microphone when a race is not going off. Those are my philosophies that I shared with him beforehand. He happens to share them as well, and it's all about accuracy and simplicity, especially here in New Jersey, where racing is very serious, where we keep seeing Monmouth Park horses winning at Saratoga to verify that statement, and it's great. Jason's going to handle all those duties as well as the Meadowlands, so it's going to be a very great conclusion. The Monmouth Park Sportsbook, the numbers just came out again for the month. New Jersey once again outhandled Nevada in sports wagering, which just shows the amazing appetite that is still everywhere and will continue to grow. And Monmouth Park, of course, Dennis Drazen getting that amazing victory legally to get sports betting legalized. We hope that our fans will show up in the best neighborhood at the most beautiful place and enjoy sports wagering here too, because it's a perfect venue, and it's only going to get better and more comfortable for the fans. So fans have responded very well, and there are big things to come in that arena too. This has been a huge boost for Monmouth Park.
Now, there's a lot to unpack from that statement, Frank, but I'm just going to go back to the bit about silliness. Is it kind of a waste of the talents of you and Jason, two guys who are very good at silliness, to reduce that aspect of your talents on the microphone at Monmouth Park?
I think that at this point, it's the right move, because you have to always remember tradition and long time. I've always felt like an impression once or twice during a year wouldn't be a bad idea, just to kind of lighten things up. But the reality of the situation is you have serious fans. And what happens is when you do that, and believe me, I built my career on that. Thank God everyone enjoyed it. And I will always know that the response to impressions is overwhelmingly positive. It's not even close. But the respect for the owners who have the winner of that race, the fans who bet on that race, no matter what, when you get funny, you're going to irritate someone. And therefore, to keep it simple, safe, and in the tradition of what Monmouth Park represents, you keep it simple here. And that was what I was told when I got here. It has worked. So I told Jason to just you just got to get a hold. It's like a horse. You just got to take a horse under a hold and relax and use those skills to memorize the field and accurately describe what's happening, and you're a superstar. And Jason left here with rave reviews nationwide. Not one bad word was said about him online, which is impossible.
That's impossible, yeah.
Everyone does it. Everyone has some detractors, right?
Mother Teresa has trolls.
It's about accuracy and simplicity. I just believe in that. And it's ironic that I believe in that, considering I came in with the most bizarre race calls after the legend Larry Letterman started that whole routine back in the late 80s. It opened a door for me. It's something I enjoy doing, but there's a time and place, and at Monmouth Park, it's not the right spot.
And in all seriousness, one thing that unites you two as race callers that I know we appreciate, it's not limited to you two. There's a lot of race callers around the country who do this, but it's something that I think fans appreciate a lot, is letting the gambler know what they need to know. You know, subtly pointing out runs or lack thereof, not in a way where you're telling us what happens before it happens, but just letting the gambler sort of know when maybe it's time to start their route. Is that something you do consciously, or is it just come naturally at this point?
for me, I just try to tell people what I'm seeing and be as completely honest and open during the whole call, including the end, who finished well. I said something in a race I've never said before or anything like it recently. I said such and such tried to go through a hole that did not exist and paid the price, which was really a weird thing for me to say. That was excess commentary. I would definitely get at least a 5-yard penalty for excess commentary there. But that horse, whose name is Ink Spots, came back last weekend and romped. So if anyone was watching and maybe missed what happened there the time before, boom, they ended up getting a winner. And the whole thing, the whole theme, I believe, of people who work in the industry, whether you're the announcer, the handicapper, the marketing guy, the salesperson, the racing secretary, is you want to enhance the experience for everybody and help them every way possible. So I think as an announcer, your job is to call the race, be accurate, point things out, and just try to help the fan. If you're a morning line maker and there's a vulnerable big favorite that you might have made even money, maybe you make that one 7-5 and you make the horse that you absolutely love and think will beat him or her 9-5, you're kind of issuing a warning, hey, by the way, look at this other horse too. That would be, you know, what a friend of the public would be doing. And that's the way it should be. Everyone should be wanting to do every possible thing in their given job to make the experience more pleasant for the fan. That's what it's all about.
I love that. I love that about you guys, and love that about certain corners of this industry where those type of vibes are alive and well. All right. So I was originally, we did our sound check. I ended up keeping it. So then we never had the conversation we were supposed to have off air about how the actual handicapping is going to go down today. I think I prepped you guys to talk about the stakes races on Sunday, and there are 4 of those. But I also want to give you each an open-ended opportunity, and you don't need to take it. We can go right to the stakes. But if there was anything else on this card, a race you're particularly interested to watch, a horse you think has a particularly good chance, it can be. It doesn't have to be like a selection per se. Brian, I'll start with you. Outside of the stakes on this card, is there a spot that you're particularly interested in from a horse-playing perspective?
I don't have one. The one thing I will throw out there, and I know we're talking about Sunday, but if by chance people are listening to this even prior to Saturday, either Friday or Saturday morning, we do have an early pick 5 carryover going into our Saturday card. So that's the first 5 races, a little over $30,000. We had a few long shots come in on our last racing day Sunday, which triggered there was one winner of our pick 6 who got over $250,000. And then we also had a pick 5 carryover. So a little over 30,000 to start the Saturday card races 1-5, a little treat for you, maybe to build the bankroll for the rest of the Monmouth card and then all the stakes at Saratoga. But that's what I would look at if you want to make some money before these stakes races on Sunday start.
Load the bankroll, getting ready for the stakes on Sunday. And here, as long as we're being so informal, idea for next year, Brian, should we keep this partnership going? Pick 5 carryover emergency podcast. You know, we get the capability of throwing a little ad hoc panel together and putting together some thoughts to just help people along and highlight the fact that these great things are happening. Frank, how about you? Anywhere other than the stakes on Sunday that you're interested in checking out?
We have a lot to talk about, some very interesting stakes races. If there was one horse that I would just say, it's really not even a pick. It's more like I feel bad and I apologize to all my Twitter followers for not tweeting before Touche's last victory on August 3rd for Derek Ryan. She's the number one horse in race 3. She won so easily in her Monmouth Park turf debut. It was her second start on turf, but her first start was a long time ago. She won so comfortably that when she was actually warming up for this race, I kept asking myself, why is this horse 15, 16, 17, 18 to 1? I mean, it couldn't have been that bad a field, and she wasn't exactly facing stakes competition. And I kept thinking that, thought about tweeting it, and I'm not just giving you some red board activity here.
We have another
because
show
I was
for that.
Nauseous myself. I should have put a couple of dollars down when she ended up going off at 24-1. I was calling that race with a lot of regret on many levels. How did I not tell anybody about this? And how did she just win again? And why was she so? And that's the time when you say to yourself, guess what? Sometimes there's incredibly smart money, late money. A horse goes from 3-1 to 8-5, but also sometimes price means nothing, and she came right back and won again. Now she's in for 12-5. So the first question I asked is, I wonder if she's worth 12-5. I mean, Is she just beating very bad fields, or is she worth every bit of $12,500 if someone wanted to claim her? She obviously likes the grass. She has won very nicely back-to-back times. So that's my only flashback as I look at the rest of the card.
But these
stakes races are loaded.
All right, well, we're going to get to those in a minute. But that runner, not necessarily a tip this time around, but one to check out, race 3, number 1, Touchette on Sunday. And with that, we're going to move ahead to the first of our stakes races. It is race number 5. It's a 2-year-old stakes, the Sorority. And, Frank, we're going to keep it with you. What are your views on this one?
This is a great race. Obviously, this is a famous race in its history for the Great Ruffian when the Sorority was run as a sprint race. And I'm going to pick in here the number 3, Micheline, for trainer Michael Stidham. Michael sends out 2 runners in here, both of whom have outstanding credentials. Micheline being out of the mare named Panty Raid, who was a very, very talented runner, as we remember. She won the Black Eyed Susan, among other races. She ran on the turf one time. She did win. Micheline was in a race where she was kind of learning, no question, in that maiden race over at Saratoga. I thought she finished well. I think they have very high hopes for her. And when you're routing first time out, it's almost impossible to win. It's something you have to take very seriously when you see it in past performance lines, whether it's dirt or turf. Such as Lovely Brown, who won her debut at Delaware, and Crafty Angel, who won her debut at Arlington on the Arlington Million undercard. I think Stidham has a strong hand in here, but I think the right one of the two is Micheline. Beautifully bred, a very nice number that she earned, a buyer speed figure of 67. For those of you who like buyer speed numbers, everything looks right for her to take a big step forward here. Nick Juarez gets the call. I think that if you're looking for a price, the number 2, Romney Marsh, is a bit interesting to me. She actually defeated the boys, fellow Jerseybreds, when she debuted here at the end of July. She's by Midshipman. I've always liked Midshipman as a hidden turf sire. And that was a race that might have taken a lot out of her. The distant third-place finisher, their Assault Weapon, came back to win for Chuck Spina over the weekend. So, she'd be a stretch, but I would put her in the mix if you're looking for a long shot. But my clear pick is number 3, Micheline.
Brian, what's your view on this one?
I'm going to go to the rail. I'm going to try Bramble Berry, one of a few maidens in here. She debuted last time in the Colleen Stakes, actually. Finished 4th out of 7, but she actually finished pretty well. She's bred to go a lot longer. She's one of 3 horses that are running out of the Dam Regal Rose. Both of the other 2 are turf winners, and both around 2 turns. Both have been running. Actually, I think they both won this season at Monmouth Park. So she definitely has the breeding to win going long on the turf. I like that first start out against kind of, she was 32-1. She's debuting in a turf race. I think Wesley Ward ended up winning the race with one of his horses who ran over at Ascot. So I'm sure they weren't, expecting to win that day. But I think they got a performance that they should be pretty happy with. She was finishing with some energy down the stretch, going, too short than her breeding suggests. She now draws the rail. She gets that extra distance, and she gets Paco Lopez. And it'll be a very interesting the battle between me and Frank in terms of our picks will be an interesting one as they take it to the turf course with Nick Juarez and Paco Lopez, the 1 and 2 leading jockeys here. Their rivalry is a pretty strong one out there on the track, so it'll be interesting to see them. Probably, I would think Micheline is the favorite based off that effort she ran up at Saratoga, but I wouldn't be surprised if Brambleberry takes some sneaky money, especially with Paco aboard, and that's going to be my pick there. Another 1, Brambleberry.
All right, race number 9, the Safely Kept Stakes. We're going 5 furlongs on the Monmouth turf. Brian, we're going to keep it rolling in your direction. What's your selection here?
So, I mean, the number 10, I'm not gonna pick her, but you don't need me to say that, the 10 Goldwood is an absolute, must use on everything. She's already a 3-time stakes winner, turf sprinting during the Monmouth meet, looking to be a perfect 4-for-4 all in stakes. She has, speed. She can sit just off if need be. I like her post to the outside. So she's a must use. She's going to be the favorite. She has to be on every ticket. I'll give you a horse that I want to use in addition to her, and then a horse that I am kind of not preferring in this spot. The horse I find very interesting is just to her outside, Rocky Policy. I mean, talk about claiming with an idea. This horse was claimed last time a month ago at Del Mar by Bob Hess Jr. Now it's going to ship across the country for the stakes race at Monmouth Park, pick up Joe Bravo. This horse has plenty of East Coast good turf sprinting experience. Back in 2018, she was trained by Dale Capuano. She finished second during the summer last year at Penn behind Morticia, who's very good. She won a restricted stakes race at Laurel, beating Crab Cakes and My Sister's Ledge. Both are pretty good female turf horses. She then ran, she finished out her 2018 in a good open company stakes race at Laurel, making the lead at the top of the stretch and then tying a little bit going six furlongs. She only goes five today. So anytime Bravo is on a horse on the turf, it gets my attention. And then it definitely got my attention more. This horse being claimed last out at Del Mar, shipping across the country for this. It'll be interesting to see what price she goes off and what kind of ride Bravo can give her, drawn a little bit to the outside. The one horse I don't necessarily like is the 9 Oddwood Lane, drawn just to the inside of Goldwood. I watched the replay again this morning. Just got an absolutely perfect trip from Paco Lopez last time. Broke from the rail. Goldwood was one of the horses in front of her, and there was one or two other horses kind of taking it to Goldwood a little bit. Oddwood Lane sat with a perfect trip right in behind, grazed the rail the entire way, got a little crease and tipped out, tried to run Goldwood down, and in my opinion, they could have went around again, and Goldwood was holding her off every step of the way. So Oddwood Lane, I think a horse is going to take money that I kind of want to fade in this spot. Goldwood a must use, and Rocky Policy the interesting one for me.
We talk all the time about how it can be just as valuable, those horses, to bet against, especially in exotic bets, than ones to necessarily pin your colors to. So that's useful info. And I also just love that concept of claimed with an idea. We've talked about it a lot on the other show regarding Mike Maker and some of the shrewd claims he's made over the years. Frank Miramati, who's going to win this race?
At this time, ladies and gentlemen, I will drift into my Ed Burghardt impression for a quick flashback to 1994. Ed Burghardt was filling in for Trevor Denman at Hollywood Park, at which time I was invited for my second guest appearance on closing day, doing impressions of other announcers. On that particular afternoon, Ed Burghardt announced the following. At this time, ladies and gentlemen, we would like to welcome guest announcer Frank Miramati, who will be on hand here today to announce four races, including the third race, the running of the Safely Kept Handicap. He will also be announcing races 4, 6, and 8. Now, the relevance to that is I will always remember the Safely Kept Handicap as a very special thing because they called me in. I called two races closing day 92. Now it's 94. I was not invited back in 93. They let me do four races. I called Ed and I begged him to let me call the Safely Kept Handicap despite only having 8 race calls in my resume. 2 of them at Hollywood Park and 6 at Bluegrass Downs. The reason was there was a mare named Cool Air who was a stone-cold runner, daughter of Air Forbes One, owned by Frank Stronach, who was running, and she was going to make that patented late run, and I wanted to be able to call her in Trevor's voice, coming like an express train. Well, just like in the movies, Cool Air swung to the outside, mowed them all down. I called that race as Trevor Denman, and I got written up in the L.A. Times by the late, great Alan Malamud. And so when I see Safely Kept, I can't help but get warm and fuzzy just because of that flashback.
Fantastic.
That infomercial aside, I will say that the Colts Neck stable, the Colts Neck stable is well represented. Of course, Mr. Santulli and Safely Kept were dear partners themselves. So they have Goldwood. They also have Boost, a closing individual. I smiled during Brian's entire talk, particularly when it went to Oddwood Lane, because it's obvious we didn't talk beforehand, thank goodness, because I would have felt so bad if I had his pick in the previous race after that great speech he gave. I actually am picking Oddwood Lane, and it's for an interesting reason. It's classic. I'll tell you why I'm picking her. And I'm not picking her because she had any excuse. I happen to agree with Brian 100%. If they run that race right now, again, last time, she was never going by Goldwood. But Oddwood Lane is a trouble-prone individual through her career. It was not shown last time, but if you've watched her, and when she got home for you at even money a couple of different times, and then she finally broke her maiden in career start number 3, every time you had her, if you did, you were sweating bullets, never thinking you're getting there because of some aggravating trips. I think she's got one run to her, and it was that style was compromised last time out in the Incredible Revenge by being too close. I think with the addition of other legitimate, whether it be cheap or not as talented speed, as the horse who will be the favorite, Goldwood, I think they can pester Goldwood a little bit here, even though Goldwood has the ability to rate kindly and might just blow them away again. If it sets up with a fast early pace and Oddwood Lane is given the ride that I think she should get, which Paco has delivered for her before in her A Other Than a win last summer, I think she can come and people will be surprised, like, wow, I never knew she had it in her. because I think she has one burst and she is trouble prone. So she needs everything to go her way, swing out wide, and come mow them all down. I'm picking Aldwyn Lane in this race to Safe Recap.
All right, race 10, two-year-olds on the dirt, going a mile, race with a storied history as well, the Sapling Stakes. Brian, we're going to go back to you for your view on this one.
Yeah, this is a really fun race. Just looking through the field once the past performances come out, I mean, you have a horse at number two, Liberate, who, you know, all things being equal, I was not very familiar with until the PPs for this race came out. All this horse has done is run an Ohio bred, won three career races by, let's do some quick math, that's 15, close to 33 lengths. No one that has ever been close to this horse gets Paco Lopez. Windstar Farm is a part owner of this horse, so I mean that is quite an interesting horse. You get going down through the PPs, the four Super John. If memory serves, was that horse at Laurel who drifted out so wide he was basically on the outside fence last time at Laurel, despite winning by 19 and a half lengths. So you definitely have some impressive horses in this race. I found this race the toughest of the four for me. I think I'm going to lean towards the six, Mischievous Alex, and the eight, Big City Bob. There seems to be plenty of speed in here. That's one of the reasons I went to Mischievous Alex, these young horses. This is their probably for, let me look through again quickly, just about all of them. This is their first two-turn race. A lot of them have shown speed going one turn, so you would think that the early pace should be pretty lively. Mischievous Alex ran into some trouble last time going 5.5 at Laurel when he was rallying from off of the pace. He might be the one trying to mow him down late. And then the 8, Big City Bob, I thought was very, very tenacious last time. Really, the light bulb went off. The first start, his first start at Parks, you know, didn't show much. Did have some trouble that day, but didn't show much. But then last time, right to the lead, broke like a rocket, really took some pace pressure from a favorite Jason Service first-time starter, and didn't shrug that one away. Obviously won by a nose, but really battled back. The Jason Service horse just to his outside, poked his nose in front, and then Big City Bob fought back. So if he can stretch his speed, he's only gone 4.5 and 5.5 in his career. If he can stretch it out two turns, he does have the outside post with a short run to the first turn. But those were the two I was looking at. Maybe Big City Bob to be more forwardly placed and try to keep going, and Mischievous Alex if the race falls apart a little bit to try and come get him.
Frank, how do you see this competitive renewal of the Sapling?
I ended up with the horse right in between those two, which I thought for sure would be a horse that would appreciate this trip, and that is Jack the Umpire. Jack the Umpire is by Bodemeister. We've seen plenty of them racing successfully on the turf. And out of a mare who did earn quite a bit of money, earned about $700,000 in a career where she was good around two turns with two victories coming in routes for $250,000. And she was also proficient at age two with three wins from five starts. So not much in the sibling category there. But Jack the Umpire won easily. We just don't know. We have no idea what he beat, how he did it. He gets Lasix for his second start. I think there's every reason to try the two-turn situation in here, and that's what it's really all about. The Sapling, unlike the Sorority, is a dirt race, so the two turns is what's relevant about Jack the Umpire's dam earning all that money and doing a quarter of it or one-third of it around two turns. So that is the big question mark, and I just think that he's worth a shot on the stretch out. Who knows? Maybe in the future we'll put the Sapling on the grass too, because you never know how it all depends on what races are needed. Sometimes you look at these races, like the Sir Beaufort, he never ran on the grass, and it's on the grass in California. But I'm going to go with the stretcher outer and Jack the Umpire on the main track in 1:37.4.
Bonus picks, final time predictions. I love it. Race 11 is the feature. It's the Grade 3 Red Bank and a horse who we've spent more words on. We've had two Triple Crown winners since the Players Podcast, we'll call it, era begun. We've had two Triple Crown winners. I'm not sure either of them got as much airtime on this show as Divisadero. JK and I love the horse. We tried last time again, sort of against our better judgment. Didn't work out too well. Not that he ran that badly, but we're just in a groove now where the horse doesn't really win anymore. So I'm just going to let you guys help me decide, and I'll start with you, Frank. Is it time to just let Divisadero go, and if he wins without us, or should we just go ahead and get back on that train one more time, because why not?
Oh, absolutely not. I didn't think he was a play last time, nor do I think he is this time. But if I owned a Divisadero, I'd keep running for paychecks, because if you run second in this race, which he might do, he'll get $30,000, and that's going to be better than any of us three are going to do this Sunday. The horse I like in here, and I almost started talking about the Sapling like it was a turf race for a minute, it's because I was thinking about Diamond King, and I'm guessing Brian's going to pick this horse. Are you picking Diamond King too, Brian?
I am not.
Oh, good. All right, that's even better. So that way I don't have to get into this whole speech about his dam ran on the turf five times, one win, one second. When a trainer like John Service decides now is the time to try the turf, that's good enough for me on a horse who is very good. He's by Quality Road, who's on an amazing roll right now as a stallion. I think this horse is, I don't know what his price is going to be. I think Say the Word is going to be closing. I would use him in the exacta. And the horse right inside of him, Murad, I don't think he's going to win, but I certainly understand the claim. And I actually like claims off of guys like Pletcher and Mandela and so on and so forth short term. And I think Murad might get them their money back, might get into the mix here, and I can see what they were thinking. But I think Diamond King, if he takes to the turf like his trainer thinks he will, I think he might really dazzle them, because he's got wicked speed and he can handle a mile easily. I absolutely love Diamond King in the red bag.
All right, Brian, I'll ask it the same way to you. Do JK and I need to sign up for a Divisadero anonymous meeting or what?
So I agree basically with every word Frank said about Divisadero. And I've been kind of on both sides of this. So I was a huge fan of Divisadero back, you know, in the years when he was winning, when you guys were. I really respected him and thought he was a good horse. I still love Divisadero, for the exact reason that you said, in that everyone still bets him. You know, he was 6-5 two back and 3-5 last race. He ain't winning anymore. So he is a horse that's going to take money all of the time. And, you know, whether I'm right or wrong, as Frank said, if I owned him, I would love him. I would run him in every race and let him run second and third and collect that money. I'm not betting on this horse. I'm sorry, especially if people keep betting on him. He's just going to be one of those horses that I'm going to let take money, and I'm going to try to beat every single time. And hopefully I get a better price on my selection, because people are remembering the old days of Divisadero. I respect the heck out of him. He won me, you know, plenty of money back in the day, but I think those days are over, unfortunately. So I'm looking elsewhere, and I'm going to go with the 3, Fiery Speech. Another one shipping in from, he's coming in from Canterbury. So he might be a horse that, you know, people aren't familiar with. He does pick up Paco Lopez. His 3 races in 2019 have all been quite solid. He was a zillion to one, making his debut off a year layoff at Keeneland. Closed going a mile to finish 4th behind Say the Word, who's in this race. Instilled Regard, who was very highly regarded for Chad Brown. And Admission Office, who was kind of like a grade 3 performer. I think he might have run 2nd on Preakness Day in that turf race. So off a year layoff at, again, a million to one, that's a fine effort. He then went wire to wire and dusted him at Churchill by 4 lengths with a 97 buyer. And last time out showed a different dimension and came from behind and won very easily, going 7.5 at Canterbury. So I think, you know, with a kind of a relatively, you know, not known trainer coming in from the Midwest, you know, this one might sneak under the radar a little bit. You do get Paco Lopez, you know, you're going to take money right there. And I like horses that have shown the ability to both go wire to wire if the opportunity presents itself and then come from off of it. As Frank said, with Diamond King and also Abiding Star in this race, there's no way in the world Fiery Speech is going wire to wire here, but Paco will put him in the right spot and his buyers kind of match up. Diamond King with Frank, you know, the turf breeding is obviously there. This is just one of those situations where I'm letting my fandom kind of interfere with my handicapping. This horse is Diamond King's first start of 2019 at Gulfstream. I thought was very impressive, so I've been on him every time since. He hasn't sealed the deal in any of those races. So
I don't blame him.
It might just be, you know, exactly what you said. It might be that kind of dirt, you know, has worn out for him, and the surface switch is going to wake him up, and he's going to run one of his more impressive races. But he's kind of underperformed, in my opinion, in those last 3 races. So I'm gonna let him beat me on the turf, especially with Abiding Star in there, who I think Diamond King is a better horse than Abiding Star, but I don't think Abiding Star is just going to sit back and let Diamond King stroll on the lead. I think Kyle Cedeno is going to have him pretty much in contention there. So hopefully in my corner, a contentious pace, setting it up for Fiery Speech.
I can't wait. We'll be up in the DG Lounge at Saratoga on Sunday. We'll have the multiple TVs going. The the TV that we can control and mess around with. That'll be our main one for Monmouth. And then we'll have Saratoga on, of course, as well. But you guys have given me and other horse players a lot of ways in to looking at this stakes-laden Monmouth card on Sunday. And I want to thank you both for your efforts. This was fun. We may have to do something like this again. It's been a great meet at Monmouth. There's still time to get down there and hopefully a chance to hang out with us. I'll get to work on trying to figure out a date. We can maybe do that podcast get-together, take the Sea Streak ferry down from the city and hang out with all of our friends down on the shore. Any closing thoughts from either of you gentlemen? Brian, I'll start with you.
I mean, the only thing I would say is we've mentioned it a lot of times, but just keep in mind, these are races on Sunday. Normally our bigger stakes races, like most tracks in the country, are on Saturday, but we purposefully put all of our good races on Sunday. Not to say that our Saturday card is bad. Obviously it's very good, but we put all of our stakes races on Sunday. You know, we don't want to go head to head with Whitney Day at Saratoga on Saturday. So we'll try to have a big day in our own right on Sunday. So just keep in mind when you're listening, we do have that early pick five carryover on Saturday, the first five races, if you're listening before then, but then Sunday, you know, hopefully you hit the early pick five here, you hit the Whitney, and then Sunday you got plenty of bankroll to take down these four stakes at Mama.
Brian, I wish it was Whitney Day. That would mean I still had a month left up here.
Oh, the Woodward. The Woodward. Where's the summer gone?
Wishful thinking.
Woodward already.
We got the Woodward. We got Kentucky Downs. We got Monmouth. It's going to be fun. Frank, anything to leave the fans with before we check in with you again soon?
Don't forget, on Sundays, the one and only legend himself, Brad Thomas, will handicap the card. He is the sharpest guy when it comes to Monmouth Park handicapping. So he will, if he comes out and starts coming with statements refuting what Brian and I just said, I would always go to that magician. He is a legend. And his picks are available every day at monmouthpark.com. If you're betting Monmouth, and especially if you're betting like rolling pick threes, pick four, you're not using Brad Thomas, you're making a big mistake. His top pick doesn't always win, but when they do, they pay very, very well. And if you use his top three picks, you will do exceptionally well with Brad Thomas. And then the only other thing I'll say is, after Brian and I's handicapping clinic, build your bankroll. Don't forget, Redemption at Del Mar for Noldy in the Del Mar Derby. A vicious beat to kick that meet off in the Run Happy Oceanside. But I think he will make amends in fine fashion there. Noldy, a horse I've been very high on since calling him twice. That's a great race place.
Lots of bonus content on this special edition of the show. Guys, so much fun. Thank you, Frank Miramati. Thank you, Brian Skirka. Thanks most of all to you listeners for making all these shows so much fun to do and letting us experiment in your feeds and giving us great feedback. We really appreciate you. Couldn't do it without you. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney. He's sitting on my front porch right now. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.